Hi, this is Gabrielle Hayes. I'm the co-founder of Cat Dog Fish. We are here for the next installment of our podcast series, and I'm joined by Dr. Chris Tufnell. Are at Chris's surgery in Crookham Common in West Berkshire. Dizzy and Tiggy, Chris's two lovely yet slightly odd-looking dogs, are here in the studio with us. They are very, very sweet.
So my vets the other day actually said to me, when I took them in to have their teeth cleaned, he said, What do you feed your dogs? And I said, are you saying they're fat? I'm afraid both the girls are probably just slightly heavier than they might have planned.
Well, you know, but life is short, so whatever. We'll get to pet obesity in yet another podcast, because that is a very interesting topic. However, today what we're going to be talking about is, as a pet owner and a pet parent, I take my cats, Henry and Charlie, into the vet.
Yep.
I drop them off. They go behind the screen, and I don't always know what's going on. So you're in the hot seat. You're a vet. You're here to tell us what happens behind the curtain. What do you do when you take that animal in, dog, cat, or otherwise?
I think we should talk about the bit before the curtain as well, though, because that's really critical.
All right. So what's that bit?
Well, when you bring them in for a consultation.
Yeah.
So you're stood in the room with us.
With my crazy feral cats who I have struggled to get into the cat carrier. They are miserable and whining. And you mean those few minutes?
Well, yeah, those few minutes, definitely.
It's so traumatic for me. Yep. I feel so horrible the whole time.
I think definitely we should talk about fear-free in another podcast.
Fear-free.
And it's really important. And everybody can go and look at this. If you've got an animal that hates coming to the vets, that the whole thing about a visit to the vet has started way, way, way before they come into the surgery. So actually the experience in the examination room isn't the only thing that triggers that fear. They've started the fear right from the moment you try and grab them to put them into the...
Well, they have a sixth sense about when I reach up for the cat carrier.
So there's loads of good reasons why we look into all those things that play into their fears, and we try and make the whole experience from beginning to end, so from the moment that you put them in the cat carrier to the end, as good as possible. So there's loads we can talk about on that. But what I'm really interested in talking about is what actually happens in the examination room. Because I think that a lot of people assume that there's some form of magic that happens in that 10 to 15 minutes when you plonk your animal on the table, that means that we're going to give you an answer to go out the door with. And we need, for a starter, we call it taking a history, but all it is just getting the story from you. We need as much information from you as we can possibly get about what you are worried about.
But don't pet parents know that? Or do you find that they come in and they just don't have any idea about, particularly if they've adopted an animal? How often do pet parents not have the information you need?
Well, most people have had a trigger for for the reason that they're bringing the animal in. But when you start to earn a lot of money, Gabrielle, you'll buy a house in the country. And
just note for listeners, I have never lived in the country and never will. I'm as much a city dweller as you could ever get. And the fact that I'm in West Berkshire is, I had to crack open my passport. But anyway, yes, do proceed,
so
Dr. Tufnell.
We're about an hour from central London. There are a lot of people who have places in the country. and there are some people in this area who have housekeepers in their place in the country during the week, and their pets stay in the country, which is great for the pets. They've got a lovely big garden and they get great walks in the countryside. But very often the pets get sent in to us with the housekeeper or the gardener, who has not a clue why they've been told to take the animal to the vet. So instantly we've got an arm tied behind our back, because we're not being told even the reason that the pet's in front of us. And then we try and ring the owner and find out, and the owner's presumably very busy in London and difficult to get hold of. And
because they have to earn money to pay your fees. That's why.
Exactly right. So to us, that story, that history is really critical. And we need as much information as you possibly can tell us. Because quite often, your principal concern, so my animal's coughing or my animal's vomiting, is not directly related to the reason that they're ill in the first place. It might not be their main problem. So the more information we get in that stage, the better. And communication's a two-way thing. So there needs to be a sender and a receiver. So I am not for a minute saying that we don't have a role to play there. We need to be good listeners. And with a lot of vets...
And do they teach you that in vet school?
Yeah, it's certainly mentioned. But for a lot of vets, they're under time pressure. There are so many animals to see in an hour. And there is a tendency to want to interrupt. As far as we know, the average length of time it takes a vet to interrupt an owner in that history stage is 20 seconds.
20 seconds?
20 seconds, which is not something we as vets are terribly proud of, I have to be honest.
Who on earth timed it? It was a stunt. I mean, how did you find that out?
Well, there are several organisations out there that do fly-on-the-wall studies of what we do and stuff, and really, really important stuff, because we need to know, because we need to be self-critical. We need to know when we're not doing so well, and that's the one area that we probably need to think very carefully about, is making sure that we're listening to what you're telling us, so that we pick up on those subtle things. We get some people come into us and say the animal's just not right. Mm-hmm. And we examine the animal. So that's the next stage, is to perform a thorough clinical examination. And we examine the animal and we can't find anything wrong. Now, the worst thing we can possibly do there is start having an argument with you as to whether we think there's something wrong or not. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't find anything wrong, but you're telling us the animal's not right. You guys know the animals far better than we do. You mm-hmm. see them all the time. And very often, the reason we can't find something wrong is just because we haven't looked in the right place yet.
Well, can you tell if an animal's depressed?
Yeah, I think most of us are aware of... So maybe just for the benefit of listeners, I should let everybody know that we've got two dogs, two cats, two sheep, two goats, one gerbil, half a dozen fish.
Fish. Let's not forget the fish.
We mustn't forget the fish, and a dozen chickens. So I am, as a pet parent myself, I'm really experienced with the idea of... animals being down and being dull and depressed, and whether they have the same mental anguish as we have when they're down and depressed, I don't know. And I think that's a really interesting thing to talk about.
And that's a topic for another day that we will absolutely get into.
We will, so definitely.
Check the space.
But whether they have that, I don't know. But the truth is that we certainly can tell. All of us as pet parents know when they're having an off day. And just to use as an example, there is one fireworks night many, many years ago, my first year in practice. So when we were going around on horse and cart. And this chap rang me up at about 9 o'clock at night on fireworks night. I was about to watch a display and said that he wanted me to see his dog straight away because it wasn't jumping up onto the sofa, and he knew that when it wasn't jumping up onto a sofa, it needed its anal glands squeezed.
Now, it's anal glands squeezed.
Absolutely. So you as a cat owner are probably not so experienced with the idea of anal glands. But
I'm
dogs
squirming
have these
in my
glands.
Seat.
Dogs have these glands which are designed to effectively put a signature on each dropping so that they're leaving a message for other dogs that uh-huh. they've been in an area. So
okay. Marking their territory.
Exactly.
Via the anal gland.
Via yep. the anal okay. glands, which have this exquisitely smelling fluid in there. And it's really very unpleasant. Ugh. It's probably the nastiest job that vets have to do. But unfortunately, modern pet foods, quite rightly, don't have as much hair or blood or skin in as a natural diet for a dog would, because they pick up all sorts of rubbish, as you know, out in the wild. And so they don't empty their anal glands naturally as they would in the wild. So we have to empty some dogs' anal glands for them. And I don't think it's terribly uncomfortable, as far as I can see. And many dog owners will have seen their dogs scooting along the carpet.
So when a dog scoots along the carpet, they're trying to empty their anal glands.
Absolutely. That's
wow.
almost
okay. Well, that's
the
a mystery
why.
Solved there. Yeah. Okay, I can proceed with the rest of my day. Yeah, okay, so this owner says, "You got it. My dog's ass needs to be managed.
It's
can you come?
Urgent consultation requirement.
That, is it urgent for real?
Well, in most cases, no. You'd expect them to be able to wait 24, 48 hours, and there's no risk. But in this case, it was definitely an emergency as far as he was concerned. And so I met this gentleman at about 9:30 on fireworks night just to squeeze the dog's anal glands. Oh. And job done. He was more than happy to pay the full out-of-hours consultation fee. So picking up on those subtle signs, to him, the sign was it wouldn't jump up onto the sofa and keep him company
on
a Saturday night.
He knew exactly.
Picking up is really critical, and we need to be very... aware of what you're telling us.
Okay, now the flip side to that is, doctor, you have to come out here because my dog needs this done or my cat needs this done. That's me as a pet parent self-diagnosing. Clearly that's not always the case, or that I don't always have
absolutely
any
right.
idea what it is I'm talking about.
Absolutely
so you've
right.
got to then very gingerly say, well, yes, however, I think you're full of crap and that's not exactly the right thing to do. Anyway, but back to when I dropped my cat off at the surgery, and you have to take a history, then you perform.
So we take a history, yep. And we do a full clinical examination. So we do a full examination of the animal, and that really is the main communication point to you. So if you've brought the dog or cat in and you say, well, it's lame on its left rear leg, and you expect us to look at the left rear leg first, then we've got to explain to you that actually a full examination, including looking in its mouth and looking at its eyes and understanding its underlying health, is really critical. Because what we don't want to do is just look at the lame paw or whatever
sure.
it is, find a small problem, and then find actually that this one opportunity, because you've had to battle to get the cat into its carrier, for us to look, we've missed something really important.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at its whole health. And again, I think it's important to understand that's not trying to drum up business. It's just being aware that left hind paw is attached to an animal whose health, general health, is really, really important to us.
Well, that's good common sense too. That
yeah.
makes sense.
And also, I mean, the other thing is that you can be lame because you've got a small thorn in your paw, or you might have a small thorn in your paw and it might have caused a really nasty systemic infection, which means that you'll have a temperature
mm-hmm.
and you'll be feeling crap and you'll need antibiotics, whereas actually a small thorn removed and there's no temperature and no infection, you don't need antibiotics. So we're making decisions for further down the line
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
on that examination. So the next part of the process, we've taken the history, we've got the examination. So the next part of the process is really critical for people to understand. Most pet owners that come into us want an answer.
Yeah, I do.
And
but I want an answer when I go to any doctor.
And you completely we completely understand that. But to get an answer in so many conditions that we see is going to cost hundreds of pounds. So to get an absolute defined answer of what is the diagnosis might cost hundreds of pounds. And we're all aware from our own health and from watching our animals that there's a lot of things, just day-to-day ill health issues that appear to get better on their own. Now, of course, they don't get better on their own. They get better because our immune systems are fighting them. We take some rest and they repair. So there's all sorts of processes going on inside the body to repair us. But what we don't want to do is spend hundreds of pounds of your money. So
yeah.
maybe you don't walk out with a firm diagnosis. But what you should walk out with is a plan.
Yeah.
What are we going to do?
That's like my cat, Charlie, is 13. He's
yep.
got a thyroid condition. He's got hyperthyroidism. So my vet has said there are a couple of different things that are that could be going on. But what we have to solve for first is fixing the thyroid. So he's been on thyroid medicine. He's done really well. He's chunked up. He's in fine fettle. And now the vet says, okay, now we have to attack some of the other things that we think are wrong that might have been masked by the thyroid. First of all, some things the thyroid has resolved, and others are, like, he's got now something wrong with his teeth. But the doctor really had the plan of wanting to look at solving for the big thing first, because
yeah,
then
sure.
when you get that out of the way, the other things are clear to see whether they're actually issues or not,
yep.
and that it's all muddled in the beginning.
Yeah.
But it's hard to communicate that, I'm sure. And it's also, that's a long process. That means I have to keep bringing my cat into the vet, back to the initial stress in my life, which is putting my poor cat through all of that.
Absolutely. And we completely understand that. I mean, there are so many underlying, particularly endocrine, so hormonal conditions that will affect your immune system. And if they affect your immune system, then it makes it more likely that you will have infections that are going to cause you an issue. So, for instance, bad teeth, having gingivitis, which is the infection around the teeth, may be the problem that you're worried about because you bring the animal in with bad breath and you're not actually liking it.
My darling Charlie and Henry, their breath smells like roses. Roses, Chris.
As you can gather, everybody, Charlie and Henry are on a pedestal that means that poor Gabrielle's husband finds himself either at third or fourth place in the house.
Yeah, without a doubt, yes.
So you bring them in because you're worried about their breath or the ease with which they're eating. And yet, actually, their primary problem is that they've got a hormonal condition. Now, it's a difficult thing to explain, particularly in a short consultation, that you came in because the animal's got bad breath or bad teeth and whatever, and we're going to help you sort that out. But our examination has led us to believe that it's worth taking a blood sample to identify if they've got a hormonal condition too. And actually, the hormonal condition might be a much more important issue.
Yeah.
Because if we can fix that, we can prevent some of these other infections that their lowered immunity is leading to them having.
So what do you think is the biggest misconception that pet parents have about the whole process? So, I mean, from
certainty.
Your side of the certainty. So
certainty.
The biggest misconception is that I'm going to walk in and you're going to be able to tell me exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And you're saying, do you know what? There's a really good chance I'm not going to have a clue or that I'm not.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to
know. I mean, the three words which are probably most valuable for us to be able to say to you, but to have that mutual understanding and trust involved with are, I don't know.
But Chris, how do I know if you're a good vet and you just don't know? Or maybe you're just a crappy vet.
Yeah,
I'm being.
Yeah, yeah,
how
yeah.
Do I know?
Sure. I mean, and I guess in general practice.
Do you think I'm going to get blacklisted?
No. In general practice, I think that comes down to results. So I think that really does come back down to results and trust. You know, the plan is the most important thing. You know, you've come in with an animal with a problem, and you might be expecting, because you've seen on television or you've seen on the internet or you've experienced specialist care yourself, the sort of level of diagnosis that you get in specialist care. Now, specialist care, we're talking about referring to somebody who has a specific interest in, say, bones, lameness or whatever, and they will expect to get a diagnosis, but after several hundred pounds spent.
Yeah.
In general practice, the vets that people see from day to day, you don't want to spend several hundred pounds every condition, but if the odds are that with a perfectly sensible plan, they'll get better, despite not having that defined diagnosis. So it definitely comes down to trust, and that's down to communication between us and you. So it's a sense that we all have as people dealing with people that what this person is telling me is a reliable plan, and if things don't go right, we also have to accept that it's that uncertainty. We don't know that every decision we make is always going to lead to the resolution of the issue you've come in with. But if it doesn't go right, that's not because it was a bad vet. And that isn't because it was a bad decision of you and the vet to decide to go down a particular path. But it definitely means it needs changing, revising. We need to think again.
Okay.
And that's where we need to communicate. And too often I hear that people didn't want to contact the vet because it didn't work. But actually, that's all part of the process. And so it communication's absolutely key here.
Yeah, well, that's a truism for life, isn't it?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
So in the interest of time, I've got one more question. I want you to give me an example in your practice of the absolute worst thing I can do as a pet parent. Like what's the worst pet parent who walks in and you think, oh my God, I don't want to deal with this person. They're horrible. And then what's the best? What does it, what are the parents who come in and you're
and
like, oh,
like?
Come on in. Exactly.
Yeah.
What do good and bad look like as far as a pet parent is concerned?
Yeah.
What
sure.
should I know the next time I walk into my vet?
Sure.
How am I going to make him love me?
So the worst time pet parents for us are the ones that have the answer before they come in. So they are.
Well, and that's to the heart of Cat Dog Fish's mission is to solve for that.
So
yeah.
when they absolutely believe they know what's wrong with their animal, because they care. They care. The motive is not being argued with here, but they've looked it up on the internet. They've spoken to their friends. They've all got a huge amount of knowledge from lots of different sources, and they feel they know exactly what's going on.
Right.
And then we've got a communication battle to try and get them off that particular thought and onto a path of investigation again, starting from scratch. And so some people come in and they say, I just want you to give my dog antibiotics because I know it's got an infection. Now, they may but well be right, and we'd be delighted to help them with that. But actually, when they come in knowing what's wrong, or they feel they know what's wrong, and they won't let you potentially get a word in edgeways if you're trying to go off on another tack, they're often bringing in 101 different, sometimes dubious therapies that they've tried and they've used, and those I have to say are down in the nightmare client point of view. So good is absolutely when you feel that you're working with somebody who wants to work with you on getting their animal right. So I've got one owner who thinks they're the funniest person in the county, and sadly isn't. But that's fine. And is very outspoken and very loud and very determined.
American, in other words?
American,
right. Okay.
But they are one of the best pet owners that I've got, because if you ask them to do something, they do it. And you know that they will have done absolutely what was discussed and what was decided to do. And they go home, they do it, and when it comes back and it hasn't worked, we have a discussion and we work together, and you know that they've complied with our
So you've just learned to laugh at their jokes.
Yeah,
well done. Thanks, Chris. Well, this has been great, and now the next time I take the cats in, I'll have a better understanding of what's going on, and hopefully you will too. Talk to you soon.
Bye. Thanks, Gab.
For information on how to take expert care of your pet, go to catdogfish.com.